The Italian Wine Podcast is the community-driven platform for Italian wine geeks around the world. Support the show by donating at italianwinepodcast.com. Donate 5 or more euros and we'll send you a copy of our latest book, My Italian Grape Geek Journal, absolutely free. To get your free copy of My Italian Grape Geek Journal, click support us at italianwinepodcast.com or wherever you get your pods. Grazie mille. Welcome to the Italian Grape Geek Podcast. Join us as we explore personal stories of travel and tasting with Italy's must-know grape varietals. Chart your own course with My Italian Grape Geek Journal, your personal tasting companion to accompany the series. Available now on Amazon. With thanks to Colangelo and Partners for their generous support with this project.
Okay, so welcome to the Italian Wine Podcast. This is Paul Bologna, and I'm here to talk a little bit today about Barbera. Barbera is one of the most famous grapes of Italy, so I'm guessing if you're listening to the Italian Wine Podcast, you probably already are familiar with Barbera. But if you're not, it's a dry, still wine, mostly aged in steel tanks to preserve the fresh acidity, and it's also made in a very serious style that involves oak aging as well. So you could buy a Barbera from $5 to $50. So there's a lot of variability there with style and quality. And I'm going to talk a little bit today about Barbera. Well, what you may not know is where the grape actually came from. In fact, nobody really knows. So the actual time it arrived in Piemonte is still a mystery. Certainly the Greeks and the Romans were there. And there is a legend actually associated with Barbera. That goes back to the year 600, where apparently in Monferrato, the townspeople were able to fend off an invasion by the Franks by placing amphora along the trails with Barbera. So the invading soldiers would drink the wine and then become incapacitated. And sure enough, it worked, and the townspeople were able to hide in the woods. So legend has it this wine actually saved the town. So that being said, I don't know if you went out of town yourself and put a Barbera in your kitchen that you would actually have the burglar drink it and then fall on the floor. But anyway, it's kind of a fun story. Let me get back to what you really need to know, the key traits with Barbera. And there's three key traits. It has deep color, it has high acidity, and it has very low tannin. You know, that's an important thing to understand in the world of wine, because if you are a new world drinker and like myself who lives in California, the idea of high acidity and low tannins in a red wine is really not one of the main grape varieties like Merlot or Cabernet or Pinot Noir. So Italy really kind of runs the gamut with all the grape varieties, where you get wines high in acidity, wines low in acidity, wines high in tannin, low in tannin, etc. So Barbera really is sort of a great food wine for this reason, because the acidity really does kind of cut through food. So it's a great food wine overall. One of the things that we want to talk about with Italian wine grapes is how it got its name. The origin is unclear. It either came from Barbaro, which is a translation for barbarian, so we're referring to the wine's deep color, or Vinum Barberis, which was a drink in the Middle Ages that was deeply colored and highly acidic. So however it got its name, it still is going to go back centuries. I mentioned it mainly grows in Piemonte. There's 3 DOCGs and 12 DOC wines, but it also is grown all over Italy and all over the world, actually. So it's mentioned in 106 IGT wines throughout Italy. So obviously that deep color is a big plus when it comes to blending with other grapes. In California, where I live, there's a lot of Barbera grown. Most Appalachians grow it. Up north in Amador County, they actually have a festival surrounding it. But I will tell you, 10 years ago, I worked as a SOM, a wine buyer for the JW Marriott in Palm Desert, California. And I worked there as a wine buyer. And I was buying some Barbera along with the Pinot Noir and Cabernet and Merlot and everything else everybody likes. And I will say that the Barbera, the California Barbera, this one came from Santa Barbara, if I remember correctly, it was different than the other reds. And I mean, different than Merlot and Cabernet because of that key component of acidity. So a lot of people who were unfamiliar with Barbera would try the wine and kind of be taken aback by its high acidity. So generally speaking, I think wines that are high in acidity take a little bit of getting used to, and then you develop a taste for it, and then you really start to enjoy them. So for somebody who's been drinking Merlot and Cabernet their whole life, you give them a Barbera, and they probably will be a little taken aback by that acidity. But in truth, that's what makes a great food wine. And people who call themselves foodies, certainly you have to have that level of adventure of trying wines with different acidity, different tannin levels, and pairing them with foods to really understand what kind of synergies are out there. One thing that I would impress as a somm is that temperature is key to serving Barbera. And this is a topic that a lot of people don't really understand, but it is so critically important to enjoying a wine. So every grape variety has a correct temperature. And in general terms, the higher the acidity of the wine, the lower the service temperature, and the higher the alcohol in a wine, also the lower service temperature. So I don't know the centigrade equivalent, but in Fahrenheit, 68 degrees is a Cabernet and a Merlot, and maybe 61 degrees would be a Pinot Noir or a Zinfandel. Pinot Noir has that key component of acidity. Zinfandels are often higher in alcohol. So that being said, you want to make sure that if you're enjoying a Barbera, it's at its right temperature. Now, I'm not expecting you to put a probe in the bottle, but usually if you put the bottle against your cheek, it's going to be cooler than the room you're in, or it should be. The room is 75 degrees. My point here is if you go out to a restaurant and the bottle is sitting out on the counter and it's 75 degrees, the wine probably won't show that well. Or if you're outside on a picnic, because Barbera is a great picnic wine, it's going to heat up. And when it heats up, the wine is not going to show well because the acidity and the alcohol will really get out of balance. So temperature is a key thing with Barbera. So I always try to tell people that. I mean, it's also true with that Zinfandel example and Pinot Noir and et cetera. But do be mindful of that. So make sure always to have your wines at the correct temperature. You can still drink them when they're not, but they show best when they are in that sweet spot. Let me circle back to talking about the DOCG and the DOC wines of Piemonte. Barbera is a grape. It does well in a diversity of soils and terrains. The three DOCG wines are Barbera del Monferrato Superiore, Barbera de Asti, and then Barbera de Asti Superiore Nizza, or just Nizza. That last one, the Nizza, that's the most ambitious of the three DOCGs. I mean, it's got to be 100% Barbera. They allow for single vineyard bottlings. It's really the most ambitious for making the best Barberas. I'll also mention, you might be familiar with Barbera de Alba, which is the DOC. I know I see that a lot in my area, and that one's a little fuller, richer. Vira makes a great Barbera de Alba. Nizza, I mentioned, you know, is a really serious Barbera. Michele Chiarlo does a single vineyard La Corte, great Nizza bottling. I'll even say Michele Chiarlo is just regular Barbera de Asti, which you can find. I bought a bottle of that the other day. I think it was like $14. Great bottle. Barbera del Monferrato Superiore is really known for being aromatic in perfume and less structured. So there's a difference between these different Barberas. But overall, the Barbera as a wine, you know, is a high acid, low tannin, deep colored red. One thing I wanted to say now is I was recently in Chicago and I was shopping for wine and I went into the Eataly there and I was facing a wall of Barbera. They must have had more than a dozen selections. And they had like a signage explaining Barbera and they had like a picture from the mid 20th century of that stereotypical Italian table with wine on it. You know, and it had a big font. You know, it said Barbera, wine of the people. And, you know, historically speaking, Barbera doesn't really have a long history. It's been around forever, but it's really only in the 1980s has the renaissance of Barbera really started. And that's really thanks to Roberto Quinterno and Giacomo Bologna. And because they really wanted to take the wine up to the next level. So, I mean, in the 1500s and the 1600s. Barbera was mentioned in documents. In the 1800s and the 1900s, Barbera was a very important grape in Piemonte. In the 1960s and 70s, it was gaining notoriety, but you know, it really turned a corner in the 80s, where these heroes, Quinterno and Bologna, really wanted to make a statement with Barbera, that it could be not just an everyday wine, but a great wine. So there was the introduction of barrel aging, and all of these focus was really put on making Barbera a truly, truly great wine. And for the most part, they've been successful. Be mindful that you can bring a Barbera Nizza to a nice dinner party, and it should be very well received. Now, I will tell you, when it comes to food pairing with Barbera, you know, it's very versatile because of that high acidity, but it's most commonly it goes with cold cuts. So a great starter with salami and prosciutto. Personally, here in California, it would be my choice for just, you know, an unpretentious sandwich. If you're having wine in the day, Barbera served at that right temperature, it'll go with most all foods. So anyway, I hope you enjoyed this brief chat on Barbera, and I hope you get the chance to try one this week. Chin chin.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Don't forget to visit our YouTube channel, Mama Jumbo Shrimp, for fascinating videos covering Stevie Kim and her travels across Italy and beyond, meeting winemakers, eating local food, and taking in the scenery. Now back to the show.
So today I'm going to be talking about two grapes from Puglia, Bombino Bianco and Bombino Nero. Both are high quality grapes that make delicious wines. But I'm talking about both of these grapes together because they sound similar. And to talk about these grapes together is to really talk about how wine grapes are named in Italy. Both of these grapes are not related, but obviously they sound similar. I will say this, that Italian grape varieties are named for five possible reasons: their sensory attribute, their physical attribute, their productivity levels and characteristics, their perceived origin, and they may also be named after people, saints, or religious references. When it comes to Bombino Bianco and Bombino Nero, it's the physical attributes of the bunch of grapes that they are in the shape of like a bambino, which is Italian for baby. The grape bunches kind of look like a cuddling child. And when it comes to the sensory attribute, the visual, Bianco means white, Nero is going to be the darker. So it's sort of like the white and the red grapes, both that look like a cuddling infant. So there you go. Also, Bonvino sounds a lot like Bombino, so it could be that as well. You see where I'm going with this. Each of the grapes have their own story about how they've been named. Let me talk about Bombino Bianco. Firstly, it is made in actually several regions, primarily in Puglia, but it has been found in Abruzzo, in Emilia-Romagna, even little parts of Sardinia and Campania. And, you know, now I bring on to another subject. It's not unique, but certainly a Bombino Bianco story is that a lot of Italian grapes have been mischaracterized over time. That is to say, two grapes in two regions are the same wine, but over time, this has only been revealed. In the past, nurseries often were selling Bombino Bianco, but under a different name, and vice versa. So there is a little confusion with Italian grapes. You're going to have to understand that if you're studying Italian wine. But let me go back to what we do know for Bombino Bianco wines, and certainly with Puglia, Castel del Monte, the DOC white wine, you're going to find Bombino Bianco, as well as Sansevero and Cecemite di Lucera, if I pronounce that correctly. You know, you're going to be seeing these wines if you go to the area. Once again, these are not wines that you're going to find in every market. You know, what do they look like? It's going to be a straw yellow color for the visual, for aroma and flavor profile. It's going to be peach, almond, white flowers. I did personally find a 100% Bombino Bianco at Italy in Los Angeles a couple months ago, and it was an easy drinking fresh wine, very enjoyable. But for the most part, you're going to have to search it out if you're not going to the area. Something to note about the grape, its productivity is often not so high, which over the last century has made it not so popular. It used to be more widely planted, but farmers certainly over the last 100 years has made the productivity of a grape very important as to whether they're going to plant it, how much money they're going to make from it. So certainly natural. When it comes to pairing with food, when it comes to food from Puglia, Puglia is the breadbasket of Italy. Much like in California here, the Central Valley is. So many of our fruits and vegetables come from that area, and that is true of Puglia. It goes to all over Italy, the cheeses, the olive oils, the fruits and the vegetables. So, grilled vegetables, going to be a great choice with bambino bianco and pasta. There's an orchiette pasta, cavatelli, troccoli. These are famous pastas of Puglia, going to be going great with the wine. Street food, there's a panzerotti, which is similar to a calzone, which is baked. The panzerotti fried, and even the snack tarali, going to be great to start off or maybe in between meals. Next, I want to talk about Bombino Nero. So Bombino Nero is really a grape to look for when it comes to the risotto wines. It's going to be lively, fresh acidity, match well with seafood. The flavor profile is going to be red fruits, wild strawberries, cranberries, almonds. Overall, great choice to pair with so many foods from Puglia. The weather in Puglia is hot. Let's just put that out there. It's one of the hotter areas of Italy, and Italy can be very hot in the summer, as most of you know who have visited Italy. With that said, I do offer some tips when it comes to finding a wine and serving a wine in hot temperature. I live in Palm Springs, very hot here in the summer, and I have served wine all year round in Palm Springs. And so when it comes to the service temperature of wines, very important to always get the temperature right. That is to say, if you've had champagne or Franciacorta served too warm, that cold temperature of the wine helps give the backbone of acidity to a sparkling wine. It's true with white wine and red wines as well. So the service temperature, I don't know the centigrade, but in Fahrenheit, mostly from 61 to 68 degrees is going to be most wines. Certainly a little cooler with a white wine, but for the most part, if it's a hot day, obviously putting a bottle of wine out on a table is going to warm up very quickly. So making sure that your rosato or your white wine stays cool, and even your red wine stays cool, is very, very important in hot weather. I always say keep that in mind, to have a bucket or to store the wine in the fridge in between service, because you don't want a wine to be out of temperature. It is a sure way to be turned off by a wine. And I've had many friends who don't like Chianti. Part of their problem is they're not serving it at the right temperature. So temperature, very important. But also, I'll mention as a buying tip, if you are buying a bottle of wine at a retail establishment in a warm area, hot area, if you're in Arizona, if you're in California, if you're in Puglia, when you're buying a wine, look at the fill level of the bottles. If you see a bottle that has a lower fill level than the others, don't take that one, because if a wine is exposed to heat, what happens is the juice expands, goes into the cork. You'll see that the fill level is lower, so that the wine had been exposed to heat. So you don't want that. And certainly if you're, removing the cork and you see that the cork is all wet, don't accept it. So, in that ritual of being in a restaurant, when they give you the cork, that's one of the things you want to look for. You want to make sure that the cork is in good shape. So those are your tips on consuming wine and buying wine in a hot environment. So I hope that helps you out there. But other than that, I hope you get the chance to enjoy a Castel del Monte Bombino Nero. It's a great rosato if you get a chance. It's a little lighter, like the Negro Amaro rosatos that you're going to find in the south, or the famous rosato from Abruzzo, the Cerisuolo di Abruzzo. So it has its own niche. Beautiful, elegant, goes great with food. It really all around great choice. So I hope you get a chance to enjoy one soon.
Listen to the Italian Wine Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're on SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya FM, and more. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the show. If you enjoy listening, please consider donating through italianwinepodcast.com. Any amount helps cover equipment, production, and publication costs. Until next time, cin cin.